Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of Eureka Street Creative Podcast. I'm Eureka John, broadcasting from Leander, Texas. It is 9:14 in the morning, and it is December 7th, 2023, and this is episode number 508. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm still going at it. Maybe not every day, but I'm still pursuing my goal and my mission of personal sovereignty in this digital landscape. And that is one thing that Web3 can provide. And let me turn off this music here. All right. Yeah, you know, so anyway, yeah, this is my brain dump, my sandbox, and my message in a bottle, this show is. And this is just a side project I do from all my projects in Web3. Started off as a propane hose salesman and turned on the YouTube channel. And then I delved deeply into Web3 and found no way out of that rabbit hole. And here I am, episode number 508. And today is a special day. I have a guest with me, and his name is Devin. And actually, if you scroll back to episode number 200, you can find Devin on that. And he was the very first guest I had on this show. And it was just rife with technical errors and everything like that. I didn't even record my audio for that show. So I had to go back and play his answers to my questions and just like speak out and like just commentate over it. It was pretty funny, man. Things have come a long way, you know? So yeah, now I'm doing this full time. And my show, I still like to keep it janky, but hey, you know, other things I do more professionally. Anyway, so yeah, welcome to the stage, Devin. Welcome back. And you have also completely turned your life in a different direction too with Web3. So man, let's catch up a little bit. So since episode 200, what day was that? That was on July 10th of 2021. what have you been up to?
Man, I got to write that down. July 10, 2021. I got to check out that show. a lot's happened since then. Just about the time that I was transitioning from my corporate TradFi career of two decades into the wonderful world of Web3 full time. So yeah, similar to you, fell down the crypto rabbit hole and discovered Web3, decentralization, blockchain, and all the magic of this technology and all the wonderful things it can bring to the future. And haven't climbed out yet. And and a lot's gone on. We hit the top of the bull market and crashed to the bottom of the bear. And kind of at a pivotal point now where we might have a bull market confirmation that'll propel the next evolution of Web3 over the next year or two. So, yeah, exciting time and glad to be back chatting with you.
Yeah, you were in the banking industry and it's kind of like you went off the deep end into the funny money. And yeah. I imagine a lot of your colleagues were being like, oh no, he's yeah, going to play with the Monopoly money.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot of like question marks about what happened, but some of my colleagues that I spoke to following that transition, you know, I just explained like, you know, what I saw in this the blockchain version of the internet and the way cryptocurrency wrapped up. So just, you know, helping people understand that it's not about, you know, cryptocurrency speculation. There's massive utility and significant technological innovation that has already been built into this kind of new version of the internet. Like if you were to rebuild the internet from 20 years ago with blockchain and cryptocurrency technology you have today, it wouldn't look like Web 2. It would ideally look like Web 3. So I think people understood that, as somebody who was always, kind of pursuing the next evolution in digital, because I was in TradFi, but I was in the digital side of the commerce, right? So running digital marketing and building digital products at banks. This is really a natural evolution for digital product innovation in financial services.
Wouldn't they call that fintech now?
Yeah. It's basically, fintech would be the industry for sure. Yeah. Fintech and martech were kind of my specialties. And they carry forward quite nicely into crypto and Web3.
Yeah. So a lot of the digital gurus at the banks discovered Web3, and the banks quite weren't ready to go there yet.
Yeah.
So you had to find a point of separation and departure.
Yeah. 100%. Right. And that's basically what I was doing. And like, for me, this is kind of front running the opportunity. Obviously the hurdles, when you think of the rise of social media on the cusp of the mobile technological revolution, there's similarities with Web3 from the adoption curve perspective, where, what's going to be Web3's iPhone, right? So dating myself and my age, like I was one of the earliest kind of heads of product at one of the banks to tackle mobile banking. Like, will people bank on their mobile phone? And this is before the iPhone. So when you're at a bank and everyone's kind of scrolling up and down on their Blackberries, and they just really sunk their teeth into like online banking and online trading on a computer, I don't see how this translates. And so you're trying to sell through to your large matrix corporate environment that, hey, like, yeah, well, it will, like, it's inevitable that, this would go mobile. So, we built that product roadmap and strategy and sold it through at the bank. But it was when the iPhone came in that really drove the growth, both from an internal kind of acceptance of where the puck was going in the digital market from online to mobile. And obviously the adoption curve from the consumers who are buying iPhones and having a much improved experience. So I think Web3 is kind of on the cusp of that. Like, what is the thing that will propel the onboarding of the next wave of adopters? Because everyone at Web3 is kind of in that segment of early technology adopters. The mass market won't come until there's something more compelling. And there's different barriers to the technology of Web3 because, your own keys, your own assets, like that decentralized paradigm that is enabled with cryptography on the blockchain, it's tough to wrap your head around because there's nothing in the current digital landscape, especially with respect to financial services that it compares to. Like the idea that, in a couple of seconds, I can create a private key and establish a wallet that I own on the blockchain that can essentially, with decentralized finance and cryptocurrency, basically allows me to be my own bank and do everything that a bank can do in a decentralized context through the various services that have been built. It's like, how do you imagine and build a mental model around that when the traditional financial system is how you grew up? So yeah, it's a whole different ball game. I think the adoption curve is a little slow, is going to be a lot slower than some of the other exponential technologies, but nonetheless, yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah. It's like the beginning of the internet, it's like you couldn't really explain to people the use case of it because they didn't have a lot of computers in their homes. And I believe it was the Wall Street Journal that was just a PDF at the beginning because they had to model it after something that they were already familiar with. And yeah. But you know, I think that the tokens and the, I guess the coins, you know, that people buy for crypto to speculate on, it's just really the financial use case is just like the Trojan horse. I mean, it opens up into a wide variety of industries, which leads me to where we're going with this. You know, it goes into, you know, art, it goes into memberships, it opens up, you know, a passport to opportunities that you can program into this via non-fungible tokens, you know. So just the finance part of it is just the tip of the iceberg. And I guess, you know, you've left the banking industry, you're working full-time in Web3. Can I say it? You're working at Defiant?
Yep.
And that's like full on, you know, Web3 publication right there. Talks about nothing but crypto and finance and Web3 and all that stuff.
Yep.
And then you've also formed another project called Legends of Cypher.io. And this is in the comic book industry, you know. And who would have thought, you know, that you could combine crypto with comics? But with NFTs, you can see that there's a use case of crypto and art. But people say, well, it's just JPEGs on the internet. No, there's a lot more to it. So tell me a little bit about, first of all, like, let's rewind and be like, okay, why comics? Is this something you've always been interested in? Is this, did you grow up? And where did all this start?
Yeah, I think that the kind of the origin story of the Legends of Cypher project is fairly layered. So yeah, like always been a sci-fi fan first, like love the epic sci-fi narrative. You know, Star Wars, grew up loving Star Wars films, comic book collector as a kid, and really loved the kind of this dystopian band. Like I was big into all the dystopian novels growing up, you know, through high school and even into my early 20s. Just kind of loved that idea of imagining what the future could be like, and sort of imagining how awful it could be on certain pathways. So you can kind of like, you know, warn yourself moving backwards from a dystopian picture into what's happening today, and are we moving in that direction? So I've always found sci-fi stories about sort of a dystopian future is a good sort of yardstick to say, okay, are we trending in that direction? And do we need to pivot to avoid that? And, you know, Star Wars kind of being the pinnacle of truly a deep character-driven narrative that's epic, and all the parallels with kind of, you know, government hierarchical controls and just different ways to sort of manage and manipulate the collective. That was sort of a theme that I always was attracted to, understanding how something like that could happen. And then with, you know, in the context of Web3 and the idea of decentralization, particularly enabled by a decentralized financial model that could sort of shift the power, because it's quite obvious when you understand geopolitics and global economics and, you know, how central banks and the petrodollar and interest rates and, you know, monetary policies and largely driven by, you know, the United States and the US dollar being the denominator of the world's currencies. You see how that kind of works and that functions, and then decentralized saying, well, you know, assets not owned by any central entity, but in fact owned entirely by the individuals, creating an entirely different financial model that could sort of run in parallel with the current one. And what's happening around there, and is this sort of the, you know, is Bitcoin and blockchain freedom technology, and, you know, countries that have, you know, trying to protect their wealth by getting out of their currency and putting it into cryptocurrencies to protect themselves and their wealth from governments. It's just a very, very kind of intriguing thing that's happening in the world today with technology's evolution. So those two things in my mind kind of combined when I was in my first DAO, bankless DAO, which you and I first crossed paths, I believe it was. And that's also where I met the team I work with on Legends of Cypher. And we were all just kind of trying to figure out what bankless DAO could be and all sorts of crazy ideas. And I was coming from a digital marketing lens and I was leading the marketing guild there. And some guys were coming up with these really cool ideas. And I was really attracted to this, you know, atypical marketing. Let's tell different stories. And this one guy, Crayons, had this really cool idea about a science fiction character in the future called Hash, who invented a technology called Cypher that was sort of akin to like cryptocurrency. And then another fellow, DeVoice, kind of came up with a history of this universe for Legends of Cypher, where, you know, the Centopoly was a corporatocracy and government mashup that was using an AI-powered metric to kind of manage the entire across the galaxies and the cosmos to manage everyone's sort of behaviors. And Cypher was the thing that could possibly unhook people from that. So it was this we were just creating this universe, and we all just sort of coalesced around this neat idea, and then we took it offline and basically started building Legends of Cypher. So yeah, that was kind of how I got into the group.
Yeah, I was going through the Legends of Cypher website, and it's very well done. And you have some video shorts on there explaining the plot line and giving an introduction to the characters. Yeah, it's just a cool story. And like you said, I love dystopian stuff too, like Total Recall, Blade Runner, even Escape from New York, you know?
Like, yeah.
Yeah. What year was that set in? I believe it was...
I can't remember.
Like 1990 something, you know, yeah. That was the future from when that movie was made. But anyway, that was a tangent.
Yeah, there's so many. That's exactly the same kind of genre that I'm really attracted to.
I love everything about it. Do you want to take a look at the website real quick? Because I think it's good to just kind of get a visual.
Yeah, get some visuals.
Because there's just so much art involved in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, if I kind of compare it to some of the, as you mentioned, Blade Runner and other kind of dystopian stories. Yeah, perfect. You know, what's really cool about Legends of Cypher and the way we've conceptualized it is it's imagining a future 11 millennia in the future. And with a big question of what will humanity look like? How will it function? And if you think about like a Star Wars, which kind of is an imagination of a galaxy far, far away, the history was kind of told after the initial story, right? So you get Star Wars Episode 4, and then this massive universe blows up out of that. You're learning about the history. Obviously, George Lucas probably had a lot of it in his mind. But in contrast to that, what we've done is we've kind of imagined, like, our story starts 11 millennia in the future with great characters and everything that makes Star Wars an epic legacy story. But for the last 2.5 years, we've been kind of building that 11 millennia history and just so really solidifying it in our little collective mind so that when we create the stories that are now going forward, like, it's really based on a deep history. So when you go to our website today and you explore, you're going to learn about the history of the universe. You're going to, see the origin stories of some key characters around this millennia start point. So unlike traditional crowdfund campaigns, which is ultimately what we're doing, traditionally a comic book crowdfund campaign would say, okay, you know, here's my comic book cover. Here's some concept statements. Here's some cool characters and some art. and I'd like to raise this money and create book one or book one through three, and you get a special edition, et cetera, et cetera. It's going back to our origins of Web 3. We had launched an NFT off a book called Maru 36, Destiny's Fall. So that's an entire book you can read for free online. So if you click on it, it'll take a minute to load the PDF reader. So that talks about a significant point in history leading up to the through line of Legends of Cypher. So we created Maru 36, we articulated the vision of Legends of Cypher, and we launched an NFT. And the NFT was basically selling this book, and we did a partner NFT with Bankless, which was, we designed a ship from this story for the Bankless team and created an NFT. And we raised some money, and then that money we used because the bear market kicked in for NFTs and it tanked. So the market for NFTs was pretty much gone. So we took the money that we did make and we pivoted our strategy to say, okay, we're going to build out this universe. Let's create a lot, some free content, and not just sell it as an NFT to Web3, but let's expand the market. And so we can also appeal to Web2 users. So the website you're looking at today, if you want to go back to the homepage, is the culmination of the year and a half following that NFT sale. And so this crowdfund is both something that a person in traditional finance Web2 support can support. So if you, there you go. If you go to the campaign page, you can pledge support through just using your credit card. So if you scroll down, you can see some of the different packages. And if you are in Web3, there's packages that are custom and exclusive just to people that buy the NFTs from our gallery. So one of the big innovations that's kind of happened is, you know, the ability to use NFT as a utility. So when you buy an NFT, you can go to our packages and you basically bypass the paywall to get your package for free because you've already bought an NFT. And then the NFT comes with utility benefits such as, you know, free lifetime digital versions of all of our comics. And then, you know, your typical Web3 airdrops for tokens and things like that if you're a Cosmos Pass holder. And then the Cypherian Pass would allow you to have access forever to free digital comics. So even if you just said, you know, I'm not interested in limited edition prints, I don't want those, you could, well, if you buy the Cypherian Pass, you forever will be able to read the digital versions of our comics. And if you buy a Cosmos Pass, you get a free Cypherian Pass. And it's a soulbound token, which is, you know, a new Web3 construct that basically says you can't transfer the soulbound token. So it's not something that we're putting out there that people can speculate on the market. You hold it forever, you'll get free airdrops forever. So it's your kind of fan for life token. But the Cypherian Pass, because it's got a value proposition for a lifetime, it can be traded on the secondary market. So if, you know, if season two comes and you just think the story's gone in a weird direction and you're no longer a fan, you can sell your Cypherian Pass on the secondary market to a new fan who might just love season two and would like to continue with the story. So that's kind of the unique model that we've evolved this to since our initial NFT sales. So yeah, that's kind of the in a long-winded nutshell what we've built.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like you and Crayon originally started it. The idea
came from Crayons initially.
Crayons, yeah, I remember Crayons. Yeah, and Bankless.
Yeah, Bell. Yeah, yeah. He's from the homepage. There's a video of him and I talking about the universe, so you could see his wonderful face there and learn his real name, Barry. So he kind of came with this idea of hash and cipher, and then DuBois jumped in. Yeah, and DuBois jumped in and created this idea of the syntopoly, and this whole expansive world of how the syntopoly operates. And then I came in because as a big story fan and started adding to the story. And then our colleague James, also from Bankless DAO, who is an artist, was sketching some art ideas. And then, yeah, we started to flush it out in further detail. But yeah, it's really cool. Like if you dig into some of all the lore that's free on the website today, you really see the parallels with Web3. Kind of this idea between obviously syntopoly centralization and cipher crypto decentralization, and hash and Malarian being the characters representing those two sides. But what's really interesting about our story is it's not easy to weigh the pros and cons, because the syntopoly is perfected kind of reward and abundance. Like, the syntopoly understands how decentralization works, and it also understands the benefits of centralization. So it's created so many benefits and a perception of freedom and individual choice inside the syntopoly that it seems like a great choice, because the metric, if you follow the metric, it's not like a mind controlling thing. We call it a behavior modification system. But the way it executes with people is it encourages behaviors that have rewards. So, you know, we kind of have a story that we haven't shared, but like an articulation of examples of what the metric does. So, for example, if you're in the syntopoly and you have a particular job and you're following the metric end to end, it will tell you things like, hey, seems like you might be struggling with work-life balance. Here's a free vacation, right? Like, oh, okay. And here's some things, a free subscription to a meditation course. There's, like, these are just examples. But the point is, the metric isn't like to rigidly control your behavior and subject you to lower tiers of life. Because the syntopoly with its AI, the metric, already knows that how and why that doesn't work. So it's perfected an abundance sort of mindset and mentality. So people couldn't imagine what could be wrong with it, because it's continuously optimizing, and it creates a predictable future and all these good things and stability and structure. Whereas hash and people who, for the Cypherians that want to use Cypher to kind of unhook people from the metric, are making a tough argument, which is, well, we believe that humanity is losing its humanity, its consciousness, right? Like, chaos is freedom and can establish new perspectives and new things. The syntopoly is not really innovating anymore. It's just kind of keeping status quo. So, but the way the syntopoly does it is so perfectly abundant that it's like, well, what would you really choose? Like, a centralized perfect system or total absolute freedom that comes with a bit of chaos? And that's kind of the conflict and tension and philosophy. So if you're on our website and you go to, what section is it? The universe page. Yeah. Under the lore, there's a blog post called Clashing Worldviews. Yeah, keep going below that. Below factions, Clashing Worldviews. Yep, that one. There's Hash and Malarians, the lightning bolt in between their heads. If you click on that, it takes you to a blog post that kind of talks a little bit about these philosophies that I'm articulating. And then you can listen to the musings. So if you click on Listen to Musings there, you'll hear Hash and Malarian having this debate about these two different worlds. So if you're into the philosophical kind of narrative that we're developing here, that'd be a good place to start. And if you go back to the universe page, as I was saying earlier, unlike traditional comic crowd funds, origin stories, like we've finished comics up a little higher. Yeah. Up. Yeah. That. So book zero, for example, is it's a 12 page comic with the origin story about Hash and Malarian, Kitsune's Tale and Chigala's Lost. Those are fully animated comics that you can read. And then, so if you pledge your support to the crowdfund, you'll automatically, like, you could read these for free. So we're letting people decide, like, read our content, give us your feedback. If you're interested, we want to build to go forward. And if you really want to see us continue past book zero into book one and through the next three seasons, pledge your support so that we can crowdfund the money we need to make the next comics. But we're giving people a taste of what it'll look like so you can decide if this story is for you or not before you pledge your funds. And so everyone that pledges any amount of money will get instant access to their own PDF versions, which get a email, their email stamped on it. So it's theirs to own, and you can look at it on your iPad or any other reader that you like. But the higher tiers, you can get special limited edition prints of these origin comics. So we reach our fundraising goal, we print and ship those. So you'll get, you know, these origin stories in a limited print collection. And then we'll launch book one and carry on from there. So it's a little bit different than your typical comic book crowdfunds.
That's awesome, man. I love what you're doing. I love the storyline. It's like the classic duality between free will and predestination that people have been talking about for centuries. Like, there's amazing books that have been come out. Erasmus's Praise of Folly, you know, it's just like, it's just all about free will and predestination. And we're moving into the digital space, and that same question still pervades our consciousness. You know, are we going to let a centralized entity control us, or a decentralized chaos consume everybody? You know, so either end of that spectrum on the extreme sides is bad. So how do you reconcile and walk that narrow tightrope between the two? And that's really, to me, what this is doing. And the question that this series here is the entire project is trying to not really solve, but dramatize, just, you know, I don't think we'll ever solve that issue, you know, but as humans, we have to follow the story of it. We are storytellers. It's how we communicate. It's how we form our ideas. It's how we live through storytelling. And that's why companies like Disney and Marvel have made so much money the way they have and have been able to be so successful and in a way control humanity by stories. So that being said, like Marvel and stuff like that, in this industry, we know that if you aren't joined up with some kind of large entity like Marvel or DC, it's very difficult to succeed. And I see you're trying to maybe skirt outside the traditional avenues in using and leveraging bleeding edge technology to do so. Maybe Marvel already has all this plan set up in a backroom vault and just waiting for projects like you to see how you do it and how you succeed before they implement their own version of it. But, you know, tell me a little bit about that. Like, how you would, do you know anything about like the comic book industry? Like,
we're learning. That's for sure. Okay. I mean, you've hit the mission on the head, right? So, I talk about this in the video of Crayons and I, from the homepage, where we talk about sort of what it is we're doing with the crowdfund. And the mission is to, create a Marvel-like, cinematic universe, you know, with the legacy storytelling that is Star Wars, but doing it as an independent group. So to prove to ourselves and our fans that an independent group outside of the traditional entertainment industry can build a legacy franchise that would rival the Marvel-like cinematic universe is essentially our mission. And so we started that in the Web3 context and, you know, have evolved that strategy to being a Web2, Web3 hybrid. But what's not changed is kind of our philosophical foundation of sort of like power to a collection of independent individuals with their own thoughts, mind, feelings, and to be able to kind of create their own destiny as individuals or collective of individuals versus a hierarchical like control of individual behaviors to a very specific and narrow set of outcomes. So, you know, our bias to Hypher and Sash, Hash and the Cypherians is somewhat known, but we tell the story as best we can in a balanced way. So, you know, we always challenge ourselves when we say something that makes the Syntopoly sound overly manipulative. It's like, well, you know, it's, that's not the Syntopoly's intention. That might be how it manifests, but their goal is really for a common good. So let's, you know, we're always careful. At the same time, trying to communicate a typical antagonist, protagonist concept. So the story is interesting. So it's, we're kind of always challenging yourself. Yeah, but at the root of it, it's like, hey, let's prove that an independent group can create something as epic as something that a studio is typically behind creating today with a very manufactured sort of process to outcome. There's lots of independent publishers, and obviously Star Wars was an idea that came from the mind of George Lucas and has its roots there today. So I'm not saying that studio produced content isn't of great creative foundation, but yeah, to your point, it scales to the masses typically with the support and influence of large studios.
Yeah, you lose a lot of nuance with mass-produced protocols like that, and so that's something that you guys are able to inject in there is nuance. And what you were saying about like the whole idea of not Cypher, the opposite.
The metric.
Yeah, Syntopoly. Sorry, it was
Syntopoly.
Yeah. Not the metric, Syntopoly creating these, I guess, these rewards for certain preferential behaviors. And it's not malintended, you know, to be able to try to do that. It's like you get rewards, you do things right, you optimize your behavior, and you get rewards for it. And there's actually Web3 projects right now that have fully implemented that type of thing with AI. Like Fetch AI is one prime example in which they use autonomous economic agents in order to be stationed. Like, for instance, you could have it in your phone to measure weather conditions. You could have another autonomous economic agent at a parking garage to measure how many available parking spaces there are. And so you could log in to your agent and it could tell you the optimal route to get to that parking garage and which parking garage to go into and has the most spaces available. And if you follow that path, then you will be rewarded fetch tokens for it. And all those AI agents will transact back and forth automatically and exchange fetch tokens in their own little AI economy, crypto-based economy, that will share the token back and forth. And if you follow those optimal behaviors, you will be rewarded that token for it. And so it's not malintended, this, you know, centralized behavior. It is for the benefit of humanity, because if you park in the garage that has the most spaces in it, then you haven't clogged up another garage, you know, and then everybody, the world runs a little bit smoother because of that. But 100%. At what point do you lose free will?
100%. And if you think about, essentially, if you kind of go through some of the history that we published, you could see a port of, you will know, understand already published about our history, the point in time where the kind of free individuals form that very collective out of a need, right? Because that's mm-hmm. where it comes from. So, you know, it's a great story. Fetch AI, a decentralized conceptual organization trying to do good for the collective. Great. It's economic agents for ESG, right?
Environmental. For optimization, yeah.
Right, optimize environment. Great. Yeah. That worked amazing. Everyone's better for it. What's next? Like, why would you stop optimizing individual behavior for a collective? Because the individuals all benefit. Mm-hmm. So the Satopoly is like, okay, but be careful how far you take it.
Yeah.
Because there's no end to where, there's no end to that benefit.
Yeah.
So what you have to imagine is, What is the diminishing returns on that unparalleled upside? There's always, mm-hmm. right? It's the law of everything. There's
and then you have the opposite reaction. You have ciphers giving personal autonomy, and which is great, you know, because that's our humanity. But at what point does that upset the equilibrium so much that chaos ensues? And so who's really the bad guy here?
Exactly.
There's no good guy, bad guy. And that's the nuance that you get to approach that a lot of manufactured large company protocols have to kind of stay within the, you know, the black and white. Yeah.
And like you said earlier, that's like at the root of humanity. It's like that's never not going to be a theme. So, which is why our characters in our story is so rich, because it's a they're going through a normal human struggle, and you're gonna understand why they're acting the way they do, the things they're going through, why they make decisions that are evil for a better outcome, and so all of that comes to life through the characters and the story. And we really believe that we've kind of imagined and created a universe that is similar in lots of ways to your traditional dystopian sci-fi imaginations of the future, but also some really cool and unique things like the Centopoly's head office, right? Because the Centopoly is a corporatocracy, which was born out of the Great Sundering, which was an era of technological darkness, where humanity first kind of rebelled against AI dependence. So we the universe starts from today, which is the theme of what's going to happen with humanity and AI. Is AI going to save us? Obviously, the powers of AI is probably the only thing that can kind of solve some of our big global issues. So we imagine it will. And it propels humanity to the stars, and we populate the galaxies, but the dependency on AI and machines is too much, and humanity feels its humanity being lost. They rebel against their own machines, like many other stories told. They go into dark ages. They're fractured, very decentralized. It's chaos. People are suffering. There's nothing to kind of keep everyone together. And so out of the ashes rises the Centopoly with the metric and the AI to kind of create a new order in the cosmos that saves humanity from what was this awful time of the technological dark ages. And that's where the story starts. So we've imagined humanity's been through this, come out, but that's
going through it.
Yeah, it's an important part of the story because we're saying, yeah, it's probably the right thing. We're going to fall, rise, perfect it. So we're imagining like an innovation on the innovation on the innovation. And that's the Centopoly AI and Cypher. And so our story starts there. So that's why I think we get a lot of unique things, because we're kind of really putting ourselves into a few iterations of the future.
That's awesome. Man, just the way you describe it without even the visualization is amazing. And, you know, it's science fiction, but good science fiction is something that is so close to the truth that it's really scary.
Yeah. You got it.
Yeah. And I think you guys are doing a great job of that, because everything in here seems realistic. And right now it's kind of a path we're headed towards. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We are at the top of the hour, so I want to now talk about ways to, that people can get in contact with you and follow up on the project. And
I think the best way to get in touch with us, with the project, go to legendsofcypher.io. Our social media, we're just starting, like, kind of in the friends and family phase, like talking to friends and family, just like this, really trying to get feedback and figure out how do we tell and create fans. So we're starting a social media campaign in the next couple weeks. But please do go to our site, check it out, follow the social, click on the social medias. If you're Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, follow us there. We'll eventually start keeping you posted. But the main call to action is go to the website and the homepage. If you scroll to the top or the bottom, newsletter subscription field pops up, drop your email in there. And that's how we're really going to keep everyone updated with the pace. So yeah, visit the homepage, drop your email, and we'll keep in touch with the progress. But if you've already decided, hey, read the stories, read the comics. If you enjoy it and you want to see us build this series from book one to the future to be that Marvel Cinematic Universe, then hit the campaign page and go ahead and pledge your support and tell your friends about it.
Yeah. I mean, was it Star Wars started off as little pulp novels? My older brother had all the little paperbacks of Star Wars before it became this huge, industry. So
yeah,
I think The Matrix even, and just a lot of these series just started off as just like this. So
yeah,
who knows? You could be at the ground floor of something. And this time using Web3 technology, using the Syntopoly.
Yeah. And it'll be something like we're so invested in this story. We'll never stop. So if it takes 2 years to reach our fundraising goal, which is significant because we want to really get a good start, then it'll take 2 years.
The thing about it is, it sounds like you guys are just like, you would be doing this regardless. Like you and Crowns. The storyline and the way you talk about like how it all began, it just sounds like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it just sounds like maybe once a week y'all just kind of met up and just talked about, creating this story and just adding like a living document, each person just writing a little bit and passing it back and forth. Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's how it started, meeting a week. We had a couple false starts on sort of an overview film and a couple false starts on character designs and story writing and then book and then comics. We've just like, it's a passion project that we do in our free time because it's super fun and we're passionate about the story and we're learning how to do stuff that we we all have different skills and bring different qualities to the project, but none of us has done what we're actually doing together. So it's we're learning a ton and having a ton of fun. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a couple. Yeah. We meet a couple times a week and have a great time and put some stuff together in between meetings.
I'm all about that. Just the DIY aspect and community building, and then. I have 508 episodes of this funny little show here, but there's been a lot of cool stuff that has culminated from it. And it's not been because that's what I wanted to do, the original aim. It's just because I wanted to just practice and learn and do stuff and have fun. Yep. And this is exactly what you're doing. You're practicing, learning the industry, having fun with friends and creating a story. So,
yeah.
More power to you for that, dude.
Cheers. Appreciate you.
And we'll say goodbye.
Good to see you, man. Yeah, thanks for having me. And looking forward to the next one.
Right on.
Peace.